Hello, and welcome to Relationships 101. I'm Dr. Beth Erickson, and this is WebTalkRadio.net. Today we're talking about premature babies. Currently, there are 10,000 premature babies born every week. And each minute, another preemie is born. That means 10,000 sets of parents, as well as their tiny children, experience a life or death struggle. What kinds of ordeals do these babies go through struggling for life, and how do they turn out when they reach childhood, adolescence, and adulthood? For any of us, when huge challenges arise, we have two choices: be crushed or be transformed. My guest today, Jack Hatfield, says he's been blessed by tragedy. Could you say that? He's the author of Blessed with Tragedy, A Father's Journey with His Pre-Miracle. He has founded the Early Journey Foundation, and he's here to talk with us about his own and his daughter's journey. Welcome to the program, Jack. I'm delighted you're with me today.
Thank you so much for having me, Dr. Erickson. Yeah. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks. Tell us your story. I have read your book, but I'd love you to share headlines and highlights of your story around your daughter's, the pregnancy with your daughter and her birth.
Well, the quick and dirty summary of it would be how fast it happened. We were on a 20-week checkup when there was a slight noticeable blood pressure increase in my wife, and the doctor decided to let us go meet the high-risk doctors just in case.
Wow.
We went to the high-risk doctors one time just in case, and they said, we're going to need to see you every week to make sure that you are not in the high-risk area. We went back the following week. They took her blood pressure, and they said, you're not leaving the hospital again.
Wow. And at this point, she was 20 weeks or 21 weeks along?
Well, actually, no. That was a 20-something week checkup. At the 25th week is when this occurred.
From
the day they said, you're not leaving the hospital, 6 days later, that was it. Had to take the child out.
Okay. Wow, what an adrenaline rush.
Yeah.
And a shock.
Tremendous shock. It's very hard to describe how fast that occurred. That was the most amazing thing. You think life is just sitting there normal.
Yeah.
You know, you still have time to finish painting your nursery. And
yes.
All the people get to have baby showers and all the pretty stuff that comes with pregnancy.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you're in a thrust in a hospital room with lots of monitors and tremendous decisions to be made.
Life and death decisions.
Yes.
Like, Jack, what kinds of decisions, if I may ask?
Well, the first one, the big one, to take her out of the womb was
okay.
Because she had absent end diastolic. And what that is as you know, a heartbeat just goes boom, boom, boom,
yeah.
boom.
Uh-huh.
And the umbilical cord feeds the child on both the boom, boom, on both of them,
uh-huh.
on both beats.
Uh-huh.
Absent end diastolic means that on the back end of the heartbeat, the boom, boom, she was getting no food.
Huh.
She wasn't getting any nourishment, so she actually stopped growing.
Oh.
There was no way to continue growing in the womb.
Oh, that's staggering.
Staggering, yes. And along with the wife having preeclampsia, which is a kind of a condition where the body thinks the fetus is a disease and wants to get rid of it. The cure for it is birth.
Okay.
The cure for preeclampsia is give birth.
Yeah.
Along with the preeclampsia, and then the absent end diastolic, they said that the child cannot grow in here. It is best if we take her out, take my daughter out, and that's the best chance she's going to have to survive, yes.
Wow.
And you can imagine when you're faced with that at 25 weeks, and they're telling you the circumference of the head is this, and her length is 14 inches, and we can't tell how much she weighs, but she looks to be a pound. You're going, I don't think she's finished cooking yet.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's still a little gooey, you know.
No kidding. Oh, wow. So part of the dilemma for you and your wife, no doubt, must have been, do we risk our daughter's life to save my wife's life? I mean, because in that process, if you left her in, she'd die. But if you took her out, I mean, cesarean sections are fairly common, but still, how much did Jana weigh when she was born?
1 pound, 12 ounces.
I was trying to think of how much that is. You know, when you go to the grocery store and you buy a pound of hamburger, or you buy
that's
a pound and a half a hamburger, that's about the size your daughter was.
Yeah, it's about the size of a 64-ounce drink.
Oh, man, yeah. Boy, I'm letting that soak in and trying to grasp that. Wow.
It's staggering to notice and grasp how small she was. There are pictures on the back of the book, as you know,
uh-huh.
Of just my hand sitting next to her. She actually fit right in my hand. I mean, her
top to toe.
Right. Well, no, she was 14 inches long. Her legs were legs were a good seven inches long.
All right. Okay. So
she was going to be very tall, regardless.
Uh huh. So she's a tall kid now.
She is. She's over 3 feet tall. Still only weighs 33 pounds.
Oh my!
And how? She's almost five in July.
Almost five and weighs 33 pounds.
Right. Very skinny.
Yeah,
like a stick.
No kidding. What do the doctors think about her small weight now? I mean, are they concerned about that?
Oh, no, not at all. No. A premature child actually, you know, there are charts for children to grow on, and if you have an abnormality, you're obviously a concern if you had a normal birth. Premature children, they kind of make their own chart. If they can get on the chart in some manner, their head circumference, the height or weight, that makes a doctor happy. We
yeah.
got on with our head first.
Uh-huh.
We got on the chart with the circumference of our head.
Yeah.
And we now are in the height area. We're actually, you know, very good in the height area. Weight, you know, it's not a concern. I was a skinny child also, so I think she's just going to
have
the genes of thinness for a while.
Okay. What happened, Jack?
Well, I actually went on I tried to make myself gain weight.
I wish I had that problem, honey. Wow. So how were you and your wife changed by this experience?
Well, speaking for myself.
Uh-huh.
You have relatives die, and you have family issues that you go through, you know, in your lifetime. This one was probably something that I could not wish on another person.
Yeah.
It's your child. You're not supposed to, as every parent will tell you, you're not supposed to bury your child.
Yeah.
To even think and fathom that I would be burying my child before I even
knew her,
mm-hmm. knew her,
mm-hmm.
had a chance.
Yeah.
Was probably the biggest shock to me. But let me flip side to that is that thought, I didn't allow it to come into my head.
Yeah.
I knew it was there.
Yeah.
Hiding behind the trees.
Yeah.
You know, over in the crevices, but I didn't let it come into my head. No.
What were you afraid would happen if it did come into your head?
I would say that I wasn't afraid. I'm a positive person by nature, I guess, and now more so than ever. It wasn't a fear that thought would manifest itself, but it was. It's something that I've always taught. You need to visualize what you want your outcome to be.
Yeah.
You know, so I visualized she's going to come out. It's going to be tough. It's not going to be an easy road.
Mm-hmm.
By no means. I'm not going to sit here with a grin on my face and say everything's hunky dory. But I am going to say, you know, we're going to go through this. We're going to make it. We're going to do everything. I'm going to learn everything I possibly could know to give her the biggest chance she possibly can to survive.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think your determination was part of what pulled Jana through?
I can honestly sit here and say absolutely.
Okay. I would think so, too.
Yeah. I would say absolutely. There were times that only Daddy's words, and there were times that I couldn't speak, actually. When she heard my voice, she would get too excited, and her stats, her oxygen stats and blood would go down. There was actually a two-week span where I couldn't speak.
Huh.
She would get so excited to hear my voice. I'm the only voice she heard from beginning. I went up there an hour later after birth, and I said, I promise you Daddy's going to take care of you.
How touching, Jack. Boy, I just got a lump in my throat about that.
Yeah,
that
one hurt me too. I'm not going to lie to you. I got a little.
Yeah.
When you bring these, when you bring these thoughts up, talking about them again, and you usually talk about the positive parts, but I'm trying to give you the background here. And
when
you go up and you look at that child, I promised her that I would do everything I could.
Wow. And so far, you're keeping that promise, it sounds like.
Yes, my new promise is put her to bed and wake her up every morning. And put her to bed every night. So I have to live the life that allows me to do that.
Yeah. Well, this puts me in mind of my great-nephew's birth, who is, by the way, a great-nephew. He's now 20 years old and just finishing his sophomore year at the University of Southern California. He's been a student athlete his whole life. He strapped on hockey skates when he was 3 and hasn't taken them off since. He plays hockey all over the world. But Alex was born premature. He weighed 2 pounds, 4 ounces. And his mom had to go on bed rest just to keep him inside. And finally, he just decided, okay, I'm coming out, Ma, get ready.
Right.
And when I think about, and in preparation to do this show, I started doing some research on the statistics for premature babies and was appalled and astounded at what some of the grim outcomes can be. In fact, I came across a study where researchers in Norway analyzed the health and birth records of nearly 1 million adults who had been born. No, wait a minute. Just 1 million adults, not preemies, but
right.
Just across the boards. And what they found with premature babies is there is a greater incidence of cerebral palsy and mental retardation.
Correct.
There is a prevalence of learning disabilities.
Correct.
There often are psychological and behavioral problems. Many have difficulty coping with adult life, and they have medical and social disabilities. And while less than 2% of full-term infants received a disability pension when they reached adulthood, 11% of premature infants collected a disability pension when they were adults. I found those statistics to be ominous. Now, how do you respond to that, Jack? And what has your experience been like so far with Jana?
Well, everything you just said is absolutely correct. And we have to look at, when you take a child out of the womb, which is the perfect feeding utensil for a child.
Yeah.
The perfect growth environment for that child. And now we're taking it out and we're putting on a blanket and pillows and putting covers over its eyes. And then we have to feed it. And I would think that the nutrition aspect of what we get from the body that we don't know, it's the unknown, and what we try to give the child when it comes out of the womb, I think that plays a huge, huge part. And then, of course, as you grow, you have to recognize there's a little difficulty here and there's a little difficulty here, and let's pay more attention to this and this.
Yeah. Well, in part because organs have not had full term inside the womb to develop.
Right.
And so, of course, that there's a likelihood, not inevitability, of course, but there's a likelihood then that those show up as deficits.
Exactly. Well, the eyes, the eyes were the biggest issue with me. At 25 weeks, the eyes aren't finished.
Oh.
So when the eyes actually come out and the retina takes oxygen for the first time, what actually happens is retinopathy of prematurity, and the retina says, I need to get all of my veins and vessels. You know how a retina is a circle with the veins going to the end?
Uh-huh.
Well, they're not finished, so the veins aren't all the way to the end of the retina. The retina says, I've got oxygen now. I need to get all my vessels to the end now. So they take off at a very rapid rate. But what happens is, also, there's a little hill that's created by coming out and having that oxygen because half the retina says, I'm finished. So when the vessels actually grow and try to get over that hump, there's a potential where there's too many vessels and they actually pull that bubble away and the child goes blind because the retina becomes attached.
Oh, gosh. Gosh.
And Jonna had it. And the surgery for that is laser surgery. And what actually happens, if you could draw two circles, one inside the other, the retina that she had when she was born and the retina that the eye was supposed to have, you laser and destroy the retina you were supposed to have.
Okay. Well,
so
that
the
sense.
signals from that portion of the retina saying vessels come out here, stop.
Okay, cool. Jack, I need to tell my guests what's coming up next week. And invite them to join me again. Next week's guest is Dr. Doreen Orion. She and her husband are both psychiatrists, and it'll be a funny but deadly serious conversation about how they survived 48 states, 22,000 miles, 200 shoes, 2 cats, 1 poodle, 1 husband, and a bus with a mind of its own. They set out to live for a year on their bus, and they both came back without having limbs pulled off or eyes clawed out. So I think it'll be a fun show. And so I'd like to invite you all to come back next week. This is Dr. Beth Erickson at webtalkradio.net. Jack, what you're just explaining about the retina development and how it gets kind of funky in premature babies, you just provided me a perfect explanation for why the pictures that we have of Alex when he was in the neonatal intensive care unit, that's for premature babies, that's what neonatal means. I look at that and I kind of chuckle because he looks like a tadpole. He doesn't look like a baby.
That's right.
And it's because of what you just said about the eyes. They look like, at least in the picture I have in mind, they look like frog's eyes. They're so big.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so I even call it his tadpole picture.
And it's more true than you think because his skin was actually very, very fragile. The skin wasn't finished. Jonna's skin wasn't finished either. And you could actually have ripped it by grabbing him, you know, a little firmly.
You know, it's amazing that premature babies survive and that they survive and go on to do well, isn't it?
It's honestly, this is why I'm saying I'm blessed with this tragedy.
Uh-huh.
Is because from what I've witnessed, I now know that you have everything you need inside you to succeed before you were born.
Wow. Even to succeed against all odds.
That's right. And that's why the next book coming out, which is soon to be released is called Natural Success Principles, and it's what I witnessed in her, and that's what I know is inside everyone.
Huh. Natural Success Principles.
Right. You were naturally, they were inside you before you were born. She succeeded, you know, despite all the odds that I can sit here and quote to you, she kept going. And she did it with tenaciousness. I mean, I really want to stress that we had a child that didn't give up. And she actually physically died twice.
Ah! Died twice?
Right.
And then, how did they resuscitate such a wee one with skin that could tear?
You very carefully. I mean, the doctors and nurses that do this, do neonatal care, are a special breed.
Yeah.
And that is another thing that I'm going around this country trying to ensure that people understand. Not only are we having a birth every minute, but that means we need to have nurses and doctors that can take care of these children, because every one of them is another miracle that could come out and, you know, cure cancer or do something fabulous.
Yes. Yeah. In fact, I have a great niece who is a neonatal intensive care nurse. So I will recommend your book to her and tell her how much you appreciate the work that she and the doctors in neonatal units do. Yeah.
Dr. Harrison, if you don't mind, you could also tell her to go to premiracles.com. It's the world's first and largest social network for premiracles and those who love them. We're trying to get nurses, doctors, former preemies, new preemies, and parents all to get on there. It's like the Facebook or MySpace of premiracles.
Okay.
And I created that and founded that.
Fabulous, Jack. And it's PREEMIRACLES.com.
That's right. It's a play on the word preemie because everybody calls it a preemie.
Yeah, exactly.
But I call it a pre-miracle because, trust me, it's witnessing something special.
Huh. Tell us more about how you have been changed by this experience, Jack.
Well, a quick background on me is I'm in the computer field. So as you can imagine, logic, you know, plays a big role in my thought processes.
Uh-huh.
And so when they're telling me all of these things about my child, I'm sitting here going, okay, logically, I'm not grasping this logically. This shouldn't be happening. So I set out to learn everything I possibly could because I promised Jonna that I needed to know. If there was a decision to be made, I wasn't going to make it without having all of the details of the situation. So the biggest thing for me was taking the feelings that I was feeling, which is
foreign territory for a computer geek.
Very, very, you know, I had to take every emotion of love, every emotion of anger, every emotion of disappointment, and just put it all away for a little while, and try to grasp the concept and take it as logically as I could, even though I had the emotional aspect, and make sure that I was doing the correct decisions and not putting the emotion aspect into it when there was a medical decision to be made.
Yeah.
After that medical decision is made, mm-hmm. you want to talk about the feelings that come back inside you, because you have to, I had to feel secure after I made a decision. I had to feel confident going, I've done all I can do.
Yeah. What was your wife's role in this, Jack? Yeah.
Wife's role?
Yeah. I mean, other than the obvious, because it sounds like you felt a great burden to take this on yourself. And I'm wondering about that because the reason I'm wondering is men are socialized generally in our culture to be fixers and producers. And so if something is wrong in the lives of their loved ones, men feel compelled to fix it.
Correct.
And it's very difficult for most men when they run up against a situation that they simply cannot fix. Men in those situations typically tend to feel like failures. And Jack, it sounds, as I listen to you now and as I read, as I read your book, that you were in overdrive to do what you could, everything you could, to fix this situation. And it sounds like you carried a special burden because of that. Am I right?
Absolutely correct. I couldn't have said it better myself. In fact, we go back to right after the surgery. My wife didn't see our daughter for 3 days. So I was the run up to the NICU, spend my time, run down, give her an update, run back up.
Yeah.
And I was the buffer. I was the buffer. One little incident we had, real quick, that I want to describe for you is I came back down after visiting my daughter, and I had already learned that she had been revived that morning from dying again.
Gosh.
And I was coming down to say, everything's wonderful. You know, we had a little incident this morning, but we're fine now. And that's not, I'm not trying to sugarcoat that we just had this big, huge incident, but I am trying to take the positive after, because they did tell me that she was stronger. She had some fluid on her heart, and they removed it, and now the heart was beating very stronger than it ever had before.
Oh, so that was minor miracle itself then.
Exactly. So once they removed that fluid, I mean, if you can imagine a heart that's as big as the end of your pinky having 9 cc's of fluid, which is approximately the tip of a pin's worth of water wrapped around it, that's a pretty big suppressive device.
Yeah, no kidding.
So once they removed that, the good news after that was, you know, the heart was beating fantastic. So I wasn't going to say we revived her from another death. I was going to accentuate the positive, but understand there was an issue.
So you protected your wife.
Right.
And worked very hard to protect your daughter.
Right.
You must have been exhausted.
I didn't sleep for more than 59 minutes for the entire year. At any one given time. In fact, those 6 days that I told you that we had from doctor visit to surgery, I didn't sleep those entire 6 days. I was sitting next to my wife, and if she would sleep and move, the sensors that were, you know, the heart rate and her breath of my daughter was on her stomach. And if she moved, those would go away and we'd lose it. Well, I found out that if I could get over there and manipulate them, we wouldn't need all the doctors coming in, turn all the lights on, and waking up my wife, which was, you know, stress in itself.
Of course.
So I would sit there 24 hours a day for those 6 days, and every time it moved, I went over there, and I told the doctors, please give me 30 seconds before y'all run in here. And I would go over there, and I'd go, come on, baby, we got to John up. You know, I was talking to my daughter.
Uh-huh.
I need your heart rate back. Let's just get this right. Okay, there we go.
Oh, what a sweet story you have, Jack. I am just so thrilled to be able to help you share it. It's inspirational about a father's devotion and love. It's inspirational about how premature babies can survive and can go on to have a normal, healthy life. Jack, I so appreciate your being with us. And sharing your unusual story. And again, I want to encourage people to go to your website, premiracles, P-R-E-E, miracles.com, especially if they're parents of preemies or preemies themselves or healthcare providers of these little wee ones. Jack, thanks so much for being with us.
Dr. Harrison, I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're so welcome. Next week, folks, we're going to talk shrink with Dr. Doreen O'Ryan, who is going to have a fun and fascinating story for us about putting her marriage to the ultimate test. If you enjoyed today's show, please write and tell me about it at drbeth@drbetherickson.com. Or you can write to me at webtalkradio.com as well. And if you have any question at all that you'd like me to answer, go to askdrbetherickson.com and leave me that question. And you will get a personal response from me, either by email or if you leave me your phone number, I might even call you. The personal response is a promise from me. It's been my pleasure to be with you once again. Relationships 101 on webtalkradio.net. I hope you all have a stunning week. And don't forget now to go to Ask Dr. Beth Erickson and leave me a question. This is Relationships 101 on WebTalkRadio.net. Have a great week.